From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Tracy Wilkinson, correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, Richard Lautendresse with TVA Nouvelle Canada, and our moderator is Paul Brandis, White House reporter for West Wing Reports and columnist for USA Today.
Hello, thank you for joining us, and here are the issues. Powerful testimony as the impeachment inquiry into President Trump accelerates. Democratic candidates meet for another debate. We'll discuss that and the overall state of the 2020 presidential election here in the United States. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been indicted on a variety of alleged crimes. Well, let's start with this impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Several days of testimony this week on national television, millions of people watching. Let's get right to it, and I'll start with you, Tracy. How did it go for the president and his defenders, and how did it go for those who seek to impeach the president?
Well, I think that depends on which side you ask. The two sides remain quite polarized on what happened, on the basic facts, and whether it's impeachable. But I think overall, this was fairly bad for the president. Most of the witnesses seemed quite credible. These were people with long experience in government for the most part. And even one of Trump's allies, Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the EU, pretty much implicated not only Trump, but much of his, many in his inner circle, the Secretary of State Pompeo and Vice President Pence. So I think it was quite damning for Trump. But many on the Republican side still don't see that this is impeachable, even if they recognize some of the facts. And I think one fact is clear. President Trump asked Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for a favor, which was investigating his political rival. But how you interpret that, was the aid, the military aid, really held up for that? And is this impeachable at the end of the day? A lot of Republicans still have not been swayed.
Now, it's useful to mention here, of course, that Tracy is a foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and has spent a significant amount of time in Ukraine in recent weeks, so her perspective is quite useful. Now, Richard, your views as well. You were no doubt watching these proceedings over the last couple of days. Share your thoughts, too, please.
Well, it was interesting to see how one witness after the other in the end confirmed in different ways this quid pro quo. There's no ambiguity that there was an exchange of favor in there. We will let you have a visit to the White House. Ultimately, we will let the almost $400 million in military aid voted by Congress if you announce that there will be an investigations on Burisma, the gas company, the Ukrainian gas company, on which board Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, was
son of the former vice president.
Son of the former vice president was, and there's definitely an ambiguous situation there, a potential conflict of interest that the Republicans kept on bringing back during the hearings. But first, as for the witnesses themselves, there's no ambiguity now. And as Tracy underlined, the next question, I felt after watching three full day, very heavy days of testimonies, is will it be seen, perceived as just a different way of doing politics, the way the Republicans are describing this, or is there sufficient evidence to build articles of impeachment in all this? And the Democrats are heading this way, but the Republicans are trying all the time to say, really, you're going to impeach a president for this? It's not worth it, according to them.
Well, no, and another thing that came out of this, it's clear that Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, was working on Trump's behalf, conducting a kind of foreign policy that had him dealing with the Ukrainians. It's interesting to note that a lot of his ammunition came from a former Ukrainian prosecutor named Yuri Lutsenko, who I interviewed when I was in Kyiv, September, actually, just before he fled the country. And he's retracting everything he said initially about having evidence on the Bidens, about just about everything. So even he has retracted what he said. So it seems like the groundwork here, and especially what Rudy Giuliani was pursuing, has gotten quite weak.
And just to follow up on something that you said a minute ago, Richard, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said they think now that after all of this that they have enough on President Trump to move ahead with these proceedings. And there's been some reporting to the effect that there could be articles of impeachment and of votes in the House itself as soon as mid-December, about, 3 weeks from now. So this is moving quite quickly. But that being said, it's fair to mention, of course, what the Republicans and President Trump are saying here. And, of course, they continue to insist that this is all a sham and a hoax and just a coup against the president, that kind of language. And they say, Tracy, I'll start with you, this, they continue to say, well, all the facts on this need to come out, and yet they won't let key people testify. Pompeo won't testify. Mick Mulvaney, the chief of staff in the White House, he won't testify, and they refuse to share all sorts of documents. And yet they say all the facts should come out.
Right. Well, that's the big irony here, is that the Republicans demanded this be public. Okay, now it's been made public, and they demand the facts come out, and yet their White House, that's controlled by the Republican Party, will not release documents. As you say, the State Department won't release documents. It'll be interesting to see if John Bolton, the former national security advisor to Trump, who was fired by Trump, will testify. He seems to have had an important role, or at least knowledge of what was happening, and he would be an interesting witness to see. I think Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, would be an interesting witness, but they're avoiding this as much as they can. So will the full facts come out, and then will that make a difference too?
And speaking of Bolton, Richard, of course, one of his key aides when he was in the White House, Fiona Hill, we heard from her, of course, this week, and she just looked at these Republicans in the eye and said, if you don't believe that the Russians hacked our election, if you continue to think that somehow it was the Ukrainians, I think the phrase she used was, it's just an act of a fiction.
Fictional narrative. This is what she used as an expression to finally destroy, downplay to the, at least what we hear from the Republicans, that actually from some Republicans, that Ukrainians were involved, interfered in the 2016 election more than the Russian, or just as much as the Russians, if you want to acknowledge the Russians' role. So it's interesting to hear her very phlegmatically say, this is not the reality. You're living in a fictional world, and the Ukrainians were not involved. The Russians want you to think the Ukrainians did it, but they did it. And so that was very interesting. It's by extension, the way she talked, and this was very interesting Thursday, listen to her, because in the end, she underlined the relationship she had with Gordon Sondland, the American ambassador to the European Union, who is a President Trump ally. As difficult their relationship was, she ended up understanding that, and she used the expression, a very interesting expression, that they were doing domestic political errand while she was trying to push national security issues, foreign policy issues. So in the end, she understood that it's two different worlds that were happening side by side. And I think this gave us a much clearer view of actually what was happening on the ground. Again, the question is, will it matter, Paul? It's interesting because we get into the details and we can say the Constitution says this and the laws say that, but we know that the entire train is moving towards an impeachment train station on the Democratic side, but in the Senate, it's going to be different.
Well, on that note, it's interesting. Let me just throw this out. It's interesting. I think that the one thing that Speaker Pelosi has done, this is sort of an issue of semantics. Instead of using the Latin phrase quid pro quo, I think everybody knows what that means. She has instead started using a word that is much more understandable to people, and that is the word bribery. It makes it much easier to understand. And when Republicans say, well, what on earth could this president be impeached for? It's bribery, it's potential witness tampering. And we also need to remember that in the Mueller report from a couple of months ago, 10 instances of possible obstruction of justice, also obstruction of Congress, which was one of the things that Richard Nixon would have faced impeachment for. So there's a long line of things that they're going to throw at the president, it seems.
Yes, and bribery is understandable to the general American public as a crime. That is actually a crime. So I think that's a smart semantical shift that Pelosi has made. Another point I wanted to make, though, about Fiona Hill, who was a formidable witness, is a renowned expert on Russia, is that she said that this continues to threaten U.S. democracy, and that, you know, if steps are not taken, we're going to be back in the same mess. And she said that, you know, Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, his goal is to undermine not just a presidential candidate or support another presidential candidate, but to undermine U.S. democracy so that whoever is elected is under a cloud, as she put it, and Americans begin to have doubts in their system. And that's exactly what's happening.
Well, looking forward here, we mentioned a minute ago that the Democrats apparently intend to hold a vote on some of these impeachment charges within a couple of weeks, certainly by mid-December, if what they're saying is true. Give me some predictions here, and I'll go first. It certainly seems at this point almost a virtual certainty. The Democrats control the House, of course. Virtual certainty that the president will, in fact, be impeached. In the Senate, though, actual conviction where the Republicans control that chamber, I simply don't see that happening. You said a minute ago you agree with that.
I agree with that. I think we see very, very few cracks in the Republican wall. And first, the Democrats in the Senate would need 20 Republicans moving on their side to convict the president, which doesn't look possible at this point.
So two no's, and what's your sense?
I agree. Impeachment, yes. Conviction, no. And as for the date, I believe the impeachment of President Clinton came on December 19th, maybe, so they'll do it just before Christmas break.
History repeats itself. Well, let's pause for a short break. More Issues in the News in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel, Tracy Wilkinson, correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, Richard Lautendress, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle Canada, and our moderator, Paul Brandis, White House reporter for West Wing Reports and columnist for USA Today.
Welcome back. Even as Americans, or many of them at least, were focused on the impeachment proceedings, Democratic candidates met in the southern city of Atlanta for a debate. 10 candidates, each of whom thinks they're the one to take on Donald Trump next year, but first they've got to take on each other. Watch the debate. What did you think?
I watched the debate. I was in Atlanta for it, but I watched the debate after spending the entire day listening to the hearings. And I felt that, I don't know if maybe I was too excited by what Gordon Sondland had said during the day, but I was listening to the candidates and there were no sparks at the level of what we'd heard during the day. I'm afraid that at the moment, the impeachment hearings are sucking the air out of the political room. This said, it was an interesting debate for all the issues they touched. I felt that they went on different topics, marijuana and foreign issue, voting rights, child care. They went further. They didn't spend as much time on health care issues than they did the previous debate. I must tell you, Paul, having followed each debate except for the first one in Miami, I was there all over the place. I have the impression that you see they're still trying to find a solid candidate. On the stage, Joe Biden keeps stumbling here and there, and you wonder, Pete Buttigieg is a young, inspiring candidate, but you look at him, you listen to him, and you say, okay, you put him side by side with Donald Trump on the same stage, not sure he wouldn't be eaten by the lion. So it was an interesting debate, not a very dynamic debate. And I'm afraid that at the moment that President Trump succeeds to block the interest for politics by even the bad news for him.
Tracy, what do you think?
Yeah, and another thing that will happen related to impeachment is that if this goes to the Senate for a hearing, a trial, essentially, several of the Democratic candidates are senators, and they'll have to be participating in that instead of campaigning, and that could hurt them. But another issue that came up was race, and race goes to the heart of what I think is the Democrats' problem right now, is that the party and the constituency is very diverse. But the sort of so-called top-tier candidates emerging, those who can raise the most money and who are doing best in the polls, are all white. And so do the Democrats go with an exciting, diverse candidate who can inspire and galvanize that constituency, or do they go with a more safe candidate who can defeat Donald Trump? And then who would that be?
Well, let's talk about some of them just briefly. Richard, you were talking about Joe Biden before. Born in 1942, hardly a spring chicken, and he does not seem to be setting the world on fire with his charisma or his energy, this kind of thing. But he does come off, though, as steady and experienced, I think. Maybe a little bit dull. What's wrong with steady and dull?
I believe that the younger electorate, who seem to be the most enthusiastic ones in this actual pre-election season, look at him as a 77-year-old man. He celebrated his 77th birthday on the day of the debate and say, okay, so what's new? What are you offering me that would say, okay, this is a new era that's going to start with you? Listening to Joe Biden, of course, he's a solid, steady candidate. He's the heir of the Obama administration, and I believe that he expects the coalition that supported Obama to reform behind him. I worry that this time is going to be different. And as for, to go back to what Tracy was saying, my fear is that I do not see in the first-tier candidates one of them inspiring enough the African-American constituencies so that if they don't come out, these voters, we're going to have a 2016 scenario again where Democrats are going to miss by 10,000 vote here and 15,000 there, a state here, another state there. And President Obama, candidate Obama at that time, he's going to be able to surf through victory. Just to give you the impression I had listening to Cory Booker and Amy Klobuchar, who are solid candidates, but they simply do not inspire voters. The polls show that they get 2, 3%, 4% eventually. And on December 19, there will be the sixth debate with the criteria are much more severe. They're not going to be able to be on the stage if they can't get more support. It doesn't look like it's going to help even this debate.
One candidate you haven't mentioned is kind of an interesting disconnect as Bernie Sanders, of course, the oldest candidate of all, born in September 1941. And yet he seems to attract a fair number of these so-called millennial supporters who seem to love him. So if Biden is too old for these millennials, well, here's Sanders, who's even, you know, about a year older than that. And yet these young kids, they seem to like him. I mean, try and make sense of that.
I have no idea. They came out in support of him in the last election, which kind of, I think, maybe eroded a little bit of Hillary Clinton's momentum. I think they like a lot of what he says. His policies are very to the left and progressive, and I think they like that, and they like the excitement. But I think that at the end of the day, whether he can get elected, I think that's a big question. Going back to Biden for a second, he, for some reason, or for obvious reasons, does poll well among blacks still. Mm-hmm. But I think if you were to break it down generationally, going back to what Richard said, I think that's where you would see a difference. And younger blacks and younger people generally are just not with Biden.
So at this point, it seems there are four people that folks seem to have narrowed it down to. I think it's still too early to say, but nevertheless, people are saying, well, at this point, it's either Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, or Pete Buttigieg, who has really come up in the polls in the last couple of weeks. Also, of course, Elizabeth Warren, who we haven't talked about much, the senator from Massachusetts. Do the two of you agree that sort of those four are, at this point at least, at the top? And of the others who are below, you mentioned Klobuchar and Booker and some others. Possible that any of these others could maybe break out and rise to the top tier?
I don't think so. I would have said Kamala Harris eventually, the senator from California. But it doesn't look like our campaign has been strong enough, inspiring enough to bring supporters on our side. It's hard to understand how Pete Buttigieg has been successful while Amy Klobuchar, who has more experience and is a strong, successful political woman, hasn't had the same type of support. Pete Buttigieg is a young candidate. It's interesting to see him.
37 years old.
37 years old with a lot of success in a very white state like Iowa and another very white state like New Hampshire. It doesn't look... there was a poll conducted in South Carolina, and he was at 0% with the African-American community. It's going to be very hard for him. So I think you're right in saying that the four that you've named will remain the four main candidates going further.
All right. We've got a couple of minutes left here, and I did want to talk about one very big story in the Middle East where Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been indicted on what looks to be a pretty long list of alleged crimes here, bribery, fraud, breach of trust, and so forth. He's the longest-serving prime minister in Israel's history, but now also has the distinction of being the first to be indicted while in office. And Tracy, all of this has been going on while Netanyahu and his political rival, Benny Gantz, neither has been able to form a new government. There's been sort of a deadlock for quite some time now. What's happening?
Well, remarkably, yes, they may be heading for a third election in a single year and a half. Both elections were nearly a tie between Netanyahu's party, a coalition of parties, and Gantz's, and neither was able then, as it's supposed to work under a parliamentary system, neither was able to bring together enough parties to actually form a government. They need a majority in the Knesset or parliament, and neither Netanyahu had the chance the first election. He had it again this, and then after time, he couldn't do it. It passed over to Gantz. Gantz couldn't do it. So now it looks like they'll go to a third election, possibly. But meanwhile, Netanyahu is facing a pretty big problem. And he's, you know, in the past, he's always managed to somehow get out of whatever tight spot he might be in. He's, one of his nicknames is the magician. But this time it's looking pretty grave, and it's anyone's guess what'll happen. A lot of calls for him to step down, a lot of calls for him to resist. And interestingly enough, he's using some what will seem like familiar rhetoric, calling this a coup attempt, calling let's investigate the investigators. So he's using a lot of the rhetoric from Trump, his good buddy, or at least erstwhile good buddy. So where it goes, it's just really going to be interesting to see. Can he get out of this time or not?
Okay, we've got just about a minute left here, Richard. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are, it's interesting to see that if you look, Tracy was referring to President Trump. Paul Manafort, his former campaign director, is in jail. Roger Stone was just found guilty, an old friend of his. And now Bibi Netanyahu, his friend, is indicted. So the bad stretch for people around him is continuing. The impression is even the White House with Mike Pompeo coming out saying that the settlements are not against the judge now, that the State Department judge now, that they're not going against international law. The White House tried everything to salvage Bibi Netanyahu's political fate and it hasn't helped. It's going to be interesting to see how President Trump is going to talk about his erstwhile friend.
It certainly seems like at this point President Trump said that, Middle East peace deal is easy to achieve. Of course, no other president was able to do that. At this point, it seems further away than ever before.
Right. Yes, I think that's true. We've yet to see a plan from Trump and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Even members of that team are starting to quit. So he's not been successful at all, despite the many, as Richard said, many political favors that the Trump administration has granted Netanyahu. Peace is not. Peace seems farther away than ever.
So uncertainty continues to hang over Israel. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll have to end it right there. Our thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Tracy Wilkinson, she's with the Los Angeles Times, and Richard LaTendresse, he's with Canada's TVA Nouvelle. This program was produced by Carol Castiel, our engineer Joe Gill, and I'm Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports and USA Today. Thanks very much for joining us. from VOA press conference.